Ready and go. Thank you. Good day to everybody who's listening whenever you're listening to this. It's been a while since I've recorded. I am recording, I think it's episode 15 of my podcast, Life Through a Different Lens. It's actually a really, really special episode today where I will not be in charge of this podcast. I have my good friend Monique who's going to be asking me some questions.
Hi.
Monique, say hi to everybody.
Hi, everybody.
They're going to be listening to you for like 45 minutes. So.
Yeah, hopefully they like the sound of my voice.
Well, I'd say the same thing every time I hear. but yeah, so I'm going to title this episode Father Abraham. Because on every episode I've done, it comes up that I have kids. And I have not had the opportunity to explain that. But so I'm taking time out for you guys to have somebody ask me questions and diagnose me. No, I'm just kidding.
And I will just diagnose you.
And just, you know, so the story can be heard. Spoiler alert, there probably will be tears at some point.
Oh.
And I'm okay. But if you guys don't want to hear me cry, then probably skip over the parts where there's tears. So Monique, it's all yours.
Hi, everybody. As he said, my name is Monique. I'm just going to ask him a few questions. Hopefully it's more of him talking. If he's not talking, then I'm not doing my job right. But wow. Hopefully it's just him talking and you guys enjoy the rest of this podcast. So I'm just going to start off with, how are you?
I am tired.
Tired, yeah.
Just got out of work. I was telling Gio. It's been a long week. Mm-hmm. Both mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually.
Yeah. So I also want to know the story behind your kids. You have, I believe it's Gabriel and...
You can do it.
No, you can.
Elijah. Elijah.
Gabriel and Elijah. And Elijah's how old?
Elijah's 12.
And Gabriel is...
Seven.
Interesting. So that's how long of a gap?
Between them, they're about 4 years... No, 5 years.
5 years apart.
5 years apart.
Interesting. Yeah.
So the story goes, it is September of, it's August 2015. Issues going on at, gosh, I shouldn't be drinking something cold. Look what it did to my voice. My sister and her husband were having marital problems. Mm-hmm. And my brother-in-law was incarcerated at the time. And my sister was living with the boys alone. Mm-hmm. And when we would go to visit, we would pick up on things that were not good. Warning signs and things like that. And I had started school already. And I remember there were just nights where we would just go to check up on them, and we would find the kids alone at their apartment by themselves, or Elijah just by himself, or Elijah taking care of Gabriel by himself. Mind you, this is almost 3 years ago now, so Elijah was 9 at the time, and Gabriel was 4. So it was very concerning, and we kept telling my sister, listen, you need to cut it out, because it's not good. Like, we would tell them, like, they can possibly even take the kids away. And she's like, no, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. Nothing's going to happen. Blah, 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 blah. When one gets in a state, an altered state, where your life is not good and you're taking, let's call them supplements to say, they're going to affect the way you perceive things. And she thought she was invincible. Mm-hmm. So I remember I'm about 2-3 weeks into my semester and I say to my mom, I'm like, hey, mom, I think I should drop my classes. And she's like, why? And I'm like, because we don't know what's going to happen with the kids. And what if you... I was exhausted. Like, there were days we would go all the way to Lynbrook. Mm-hmm. It would be a Sunday night. Stay there till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. Because that's when my sister would arrive. Mm-hmm. And then I would go home and I would have class at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
So that would happen. And I was just like, we can't keep doing this. Like, you for work, me for school and work. Like, it's too much. So I was like, I think I should drop my classes to be available for whatever reason. She's like, are you sure? I was like, yeah, I think that's what's best. So about 2 weeks after that, we get a phone call from the police saying that, you know, they had come and they found the boys by themselves and they were taking them with them. And so, and they were being placed into foster care. Mm. And at that moment, you know, all, I just remember being like, well, we have nothing else to do but go to court and ask for custody of them. Mm-hmm. And it was probably about 2-3 days after we had the meeting. And the judge was like, why do you... The judge was like, we need to know who can take responsibility. And we had gone through the list of all the relatives from both my sister's side and the dad's side. On their dad's side, nobody could do it. Grandpa's sick. Grandma's too hurt to do it. Uncle's already got 4 kids. Mm-hmm. And on my side, all my family's either in Colombia or in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Or already has kids of their own. Of those that lives here. So we're like, all right, we got to do it. There was no second thoughts or anything. And we did. That same day, we got custody of them.
Wow.
I remember, I'll never forget, when the judge asked me, she looks at me, because I went there by myself. I had, I forgot what I was doing, but I went there and...
You went to court by yourself.
Yeah, I went to court by myself because my mom was at work. And she asked me, like, how old are you?
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking 20, because I was 20 at the time. And she's like, and you're going to take such a big responsibility. I was like, well, nobody else is going to do it, so... Had no other option. And that same day, they're like, okay, the kids are going to be placed in your custody. Pick them up outside of Elijah's school. He was going to Lynbrook, some elementary school in Lynbrook. I don't remember the specific name. One of the elementary schools.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. I showed up. It was around 3:30, 4. And they opened the door for the car. And I was like, all right, let's go. And they're like, what do you mean? I was like, you guys are coming to live with me and grandma. And they were relieved because at that time they were staying in a foster home.
Of course.
And Elijah was, their foster home was in Bayshore.
Wow.
So Elijah was going from Bayshore to Lynbrook every morning for school. Mm-hmm. A 2-hour drive, he was telling me it was. And Gabriel was staying over there with the other kids. So, you know, Elijah was relieved. And that's the story of how I got them. It was actually a week between when they were taken away and when they came to live with us. It was a week.
Wow. It was a lot. You know, you mentioned when, you know, life is not good. I just kind of want to elaborate on what is not good. Like.
Sure.
Yeah.
I will say my sister at the time, mm-hmm. Was dealing with a very nasty, horrible addiction to PCP.
Mm.
It was destroying her mind, the way she saw things, the always aggressive, completely out of it when we would talk to her. She wouldn't realize like things she had in her hands and stuff like that. And it was just not a good environment for the kids to be in. People constantly coming in and out of the house. You know, recreational drug use inside the house.
Mm.
I mean, there was already so much history before that. Before they came to live with us, there had been issues of spousal abuse, child abuse, both physical and verbal. So, you know, these kids, Elijah especially, was dealing with a lot beforehand.
Of course.
And, yeah, so my sister, you know, she gave into that, you know, and she allowed that to dictate her life. And we warned her, like, listen, you're going to... Your children, it's going to take a lot. It's going to take an act of God for your children to not resent you when they grow up. And obviously it's something we pray for. I pray for daily that they don't resent their mother. But it's something that's hard, you know, when you see your mom not wanting to change for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Even when, you know, everything's, you hit rock bottom, you're like, nah, I'm okay. So yeah, that's what not good is.
Especially, you know, You don't want them to resent her or to learn from her, especially mm-hmm. at that age, you know,
exactly.
They're so small, their brain is still developing, and
mm-hmm.
anything they see, that's what they act on, that's what mm-hmm. you know, they talk about and whatnot. So when you saw them alone, what was going on through your mind? Because I know when I see a kid alone, like at a store or something, I'm looking for their parents.
We would call my sister constantly, like, where are you? And I remember this because it was the most aggravating response ever. She would just be like, I'm around. Literally, that's what she would say, I'm around.
It's frustrating.
And I'm like, what do you mean you're around? I'm around. And then just hang up the phone. And I'm like, do you have Gabriel with you? She's like, yeah. And I'm like, why? I'm like, so you think it's okay to, like, leave Elijah and take a four-year-old with you to do God knows what with God knows who? Mm-hmm. And she's like, what? And she would just click. Like, so there was no talking, no real responses, lies. It would be like, oh, I'm at home. And then I'm like, so open the door. I remember having a real conversation with her and being like, all right, you're home, right? I'm knocking on the door. Can you open the door? And she's like, oh, I'm in the bathroom. Call back 20 minutes later. All right. Open the door. Just hang up the phone. And I knocked loud enough, and I heard somebody like shuffle their feet towards the door, and I was like, Elijah, it's me. And he's like, who's me? And I'm like, it's AB. And so he opened the door. And so there were a couple of times we found them alone, mostly Elijah alone. But yeah, again, he was 9 at the time, so it was very sad to see. I can only imagine what was going through his mind.
Yeah.
You know, at 9 years old, being able to understand things that were going on. Gabriel was 4, so Gabriel probably didn't understand a lot, if anything, what Elijah did. So,
I mean, although Gabriel was small, I mean, he knew something was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not in specifics, but he knew his mom wasn't normal, or as anybody else's mom that he would hear about. That's tough on them. It's very traumatic, actually. Yeah. You know, like now having them now, do they ever like go back into that? Do they?
For the first couple of months, it was really hard for Gabriel because he was so attached to his mom. And I mean, he never like fought against us or anything, but it was always like, I remember at night he would cry constantly, and I'm like, what's wrong? He's like, I miss my mom. And I'm like, well, Gabe, you live with us now, you know, unfortunately, but I'm here, you know. And he would do that. So for a stretch of time, it was funny, he had attachment to his mom. Then he had attachment to me. Then he had attachment to my mom. And now he's okay. But, like, it was because he was so young and all that, he grew these really strong attachments where it was like, I want this person the whole time. And, yeah, that's how it was. Elijah, it was really hard to get a read on Elijah. You know, the first couple of months he lived with us, it seemed like he just didn't want to talk about it. And Elijah was kind of like me, where he would just, like, carry all that weight.
Mm-hmm.
So he opened up a couple of times. To be honest, I honestly don't know how he did it. I honestly don't know how Elijah did it. Because I think back to me being 10 years old. And, like, I mean, I grew up without dad, but, like, that was never, like, a reality for me. Mm-hmm. And you know, Elijah was really strong. He's way stronger than I was as a kid. And I honestly can only say it was God, because Elijah never, like, lashed out. Never once did Elijah ever lash out or complain or ask, you know, what's going on. At least to me.
Mm-hmm.
He's told me things, like, at retreats he's gone on with me. He's opened up a little bit about his testimony and things like that. But yeah, Elijah was okay, for the most part. He understood the need for the change.
Yeah.
And he understood that, okay, mom and dad aren't here, these two people are. So let's just roll with it. There's nothing else we can really do. And I'm pretty sure he wanted things to change.
Of course.
Pretty sure he wanted things to change. But yeah, with Gabriel was tough. Still is sometimes. For other reasons. But even this last time that, you know, my sister was living with us was rough too, because there was just this clash in authority, and he got attached to his mom again.
Yeah.
But he's older now, and, you know, my sister isn't living with us anymore, and I mean, he asked to speak to her and see her, and that's fine. But he never. It's not like before where he was like, I miss my mom, you know, I can't go to sleep, I miss my mom, yada, yada, yada. He understands now, all right, this is for the best.
Of course. You're just there to protect them and give them a better life.
Yeah.
Wow. When you spoke about, you know, making that decision to drop your classes, you know, I just want to know that transition between being a young adult with like freedom and all this stuff and then becoming a father, you know?
Well, I kind of had to learn on my feet really fast. Mm-hmm. I remember there being nights, it was actually during the time where we would always go out Thursdays or Tuesdays to get Buffalo Wild Wings with the guys.
Mm-hmm.
I miss those days. I don't miss the food. But I just remember being like, all right, well, it's funny. The first time I really told anybody outside family, I actually had to have like a meeting at church for a group I was running at the time.
Okay.
And I showed up to church and Gabriel was with me. And I think William was there, Gio was there, and we had somebody else on the phone. But in person, I think it was Gio who asked me. He was like, what is Gabriel doing here? I was like, he lives with me now. And Gio had this look of like, we need to talk later. Like, what do you mean he lives with you now?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, he just lives with me now. So it was at that moment where I was like, all right, well, can't really go out anymore at night.
Yeah.
You know, boys gotta be in at they gotta be tucked in at a certain time.
Mm-hmm.
Can't really spend money on me like I used to. stuff like that, and just finding balance. Like I remember, like I said, we would go out, and I knew. All right, I can go out, but the boys need to be showered, need to have eaten dinner, need to have done homework, and they need to be in bed by like 9.
Yeah.
And if all that was taken care of by 9, then I was able to go out and do whatever I needed to do. But the first like 6 months, I was home no later than like 12. Mm-hmm. And asleep by 12. And up by like 6 o'clock every morning to wake up Elijah for school. I would take Elijah from my house in Uniondale all the way to Lynbrook in the mornings, so he can be to school on time. Eventually we got that figured out with like buses and stuff like that. And for a good 3-4 months, maybe more, I'm gonna just say 3-4 months to be safe, I was babysitting Gabriel during the day. Because we didn't have daycare yet, and Gabriel was 4.
Yeah.
And his birthday's in December, so they didn't allow him to enroll in kindergarten.
Yeah.
So I was babysitting Gabriel, you know, during the day, trying to find things to do. He was driving me nuts because after, you know, an hour of playing with his toys, he's like, well, what do I do now? And I'm like, I don't know. Like, what do 4-year-olds do, Gabriel? Like, I don't know what to tell you. So I just remember that time. Finding ways to be creative and keep him entertained.
Yeah.
And at the same time, not go insane myself.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's still a transition. It's not something that's gonna go away anytime soon,
because
mm-hmm. I'm still a young adult.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, it's weird. I'm just gonna credit it all to God, because if it was anybody else, I don't know how they would have handled it. All I can know is I'm still doing it. I mean, obviously I'm not perfect at it, but you know, I just never really thought about it. I just understood the moment that I got custody of them, things had to change.
Yeah.
And it was no longer I could do whatever I wanted or whatever I needed to. I just understood, all right, well, there's these two lives that I'm in charge of now. I got to think about everything more now. If it's at church, nope, sorry, I got kids. Can't do this. If it's at work, I can't stay too late. Got kids. If it was whatever, it was now second guessing and planning ahead and scheduling and stuff like that. It's not actually till like the past 12 months where I really say it. I think I've got it down packed. Like, they're in sports activities, you know, church on Fridays, schedule visitations with their parents, time where I'm out of school and home to pick them up from the bus, stuff like that.
Yeah, you basically have to set your whole entire life to revolve around them now.
Yep, and thank God for school. It's all I can really say, honestly. Thank God for school, because last year, the first summer they lived with us, we put them in summer camp, and that was a big blessing. And last year, I was like, no, they don't need summer camp. I'll take them everywhere with me. Mm. No, I'm never taking them everywhere with me again. At least not Gabriel. Elijah's cool. Again, Gabriel's younger and more energetic and more annoying. Can't really put it any other way. But Elijah, he goes with the flow. You know, he understands. All right, you know, he's got to work. Go with him to work. He likes coming with me to work now. Yeah. So, but, yeah, I just understood that my whole schedule does revolve around them. And my priorities changed. Mm. My priorities changed in terms of, you know, there was, and God is always number one, but now there was a new number two where it was Gabriel and Elijah.
Yeah.
And AB's now number three, not number two.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, once I was able to grasp that, I was like, all right, this is what we do now.
Yeah.
This is where we go from here.
Yeah, I just wonder, you seem to relate a lot more to Elijah. You know, do you think that you guys have a better relationship, not just because he's older and understands more, but because you both kind of had to grow up pretty quickly. Like, Elijah had to become, you know, that protection for his younger brother, and you had to, you know, grow up a little bit quicker in order to be there for them.
Yeah, I think also the thing is, I visited Elijah more when he was growing up.
Okay.
Because I hit, like, when Gabriel was born, I was about to hit junior year.
Mm-hmm.
So it was at that time where I was preoccupied with my own stuff. And then I had college, so I was very busy. So I would visit Elijah a lot more when he was growing up. So he knew who I was. It's funny, Gabriel didn't really like me until he came to live with me.
Wow.
Like, Gabriel didn't want to do things with me until he came to live with me.
Mm.
I very much remember trying to play with him and him just like looking the other way and walking away. And I'm being like, all right, well, I won't play with you. Just go play with Elijah. Like, I do think it has a lot to do with how Elijah grew up.
Mm-hmm.
But it also has to do with the fact that, like, Elijah kind of grew up with me being somewhere in the picture.
Around.
And with Gabriel, it was hard because at that time, too, like I mentioned before, there was all these problems going on in my sister's marriage. And we tried to be around, but we couldn't really be around.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, like, and he was, Gabe, they actually came to live with us for a little bit. Gabriel was a baby. But he doesn't remember that. Elijah does remember the time they came to live with us for like 2-3 months.
Mm-hmm.
I think that has a lot to do with it. I don't think Gabriel really remembers me being around. Elijah does.
Yeah. Simply because, you know, Gabriel was younger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, with kids, I know I work at a school, so... Mm-hmm. There's so many kids in this school, and I am on constant high alert, and it is mentally draining, and you just think of the impossible to happen. I just wonder if you think that way, you know, like when they're at school, are you constantly like...
I was for a while.
Yeah.
Especially when Gabriel first hit kindergarten, and Elijah came to live with us and went back to school. My real concern was... God, like, how is he gonna, like, adapt to, you know... He's still going to the same school, still the same kids, still the same teacher. But now he's in this new environment, and it's like... How is he gonna do in school? Like, you know, is he gonna be alright? And he did alright. Again, thankfully, his grades never really dropped. Never really thought the worst. I mean, I would always check up with the school social worker.
Okay.
We would always be in constant communication, and she would tell me if something, she noticed something was off.
Mm-hmm.
She would call me, hey, did something happen at home? Elijah acted this way. And I'm like, yeah, you know, something, whatever we would be in constant communication. But to be honest, I wasn't too concerned about what would happen at school after like 6 months with Elijah. I knew he was going to be all right. Mm-hmm. Again, because I saw how strong he was.
Yeah.
With Gabriel, we put him into daycare, I want to say like that January, February.
Okay.
So he was still around kids. And I was worried for him at first because I was worried he was going to feel bad because these kids know how to read and do math.
Yeah.
And Gabriel didn't really know much. Thank God for that daycare because they helped him out a lot. It prepared him a lot for kindergarten. And, you know, I was worried, again, first couple of months. But it was more of a smaller environment. It was less kids. So I wasn't too worried.
Yeah.
When he had kindergarten, I was a little worried that, you know, Gabriel might be talking with kids. And they would be like, yeah, you know, my mom and my dad. And they would be like, yeah, we're your mom and your dad. And him just being like, yeah, well, I don't live with mom and dad.
Yeah.
So that was my main concern. I mean, he, like any kid, has trouble staying still.
Mm.
So that's my main concern now, that he doesn't pay attention in class.
Behavior.
But in terms of, like, crazy things happening,
yeah,
I wasn't too concerned. Whether that's because I felt, you know, I instilled enough of a foundation in them, or I just didn't think anything was going to happen.
Yeah.
But I wasn't too concerned after a certain point in time.
Interesting. Now, did you ever have to, like, sit and talk to them and say, hey, you guys are not going to live with mom and dad, but that doesn't mean that you don't have a mom and dad, you know?
Like, that first day, the car ride back home.
Yeah.
I was like, all right, guys, this is, you know, what's happening. You're not living with them. Exactly the same thing. They still, you know, still your mom and dad. We're going to try and work some things out. It was really hard at first to, like, want to give them the opportunity to have visitation rights.
Yeah.
Because they were both not in a good state at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
So that took a while for us to, like, really come around. And there was just so much animosity between both of them.
Yeah.
And they were both channeling at us. And it's like, we're just cleaning up your mess. Why are you guys mad at us? Like, so, we would always tell them, listen, you know, call your dad, call mom. Especially when we gave Elijah a phone. Have you texted your dad? Have you spoken to your dad this week? You know, your dad told me he called you and you didn't pick up. Why didn't you call him back? Stuff like that. And Elijah would be like, oh, I don't really want to talk to him. And I'm like, I get you. I was like, Elijah, if there's anybody who gets you, I do. Because I was like that as a kid. My mom would be the one who encouraged me to call my dad.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, yeah, I don't really want to talk to him. What are we going to talk about?
Yeah.
But Elijah grew open to that. And, you know, they definitely understand now that, hey, you live with us, but, you know, mom and dad are still your mom and dad, and we want you to see them and communicate with them. But at first, it was tough because how we want to protect them, but at the same, we want them to stay in communication with their parents, but we also understand the need to protect them from
their
own parents at that point in time.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, it was tough, but, you know, they got it over time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there were times where we had to say, all right, listen, because the kids would come home and tell us stuff, and it would ring an alarm bell, and it'd be like, yeah, you guys aren't seeing the kids for a while. And they would be like, why? And it's like, because you did X, Y, and Z in front of them, or, you know, that can't happen in front of them, or you can't be doing this, you can't bring them around certain people, they're kids, you know. So, yeah, that was it. But we made it clear to them that, you know, we wanted them to have a relationship with their parents, even though they live with us.
Yeah.
It's something I knew about because growing up, my cousins actually, they live in the same house I did with my mom and my grandma. My two cousins, Jonathan and Tracy, their parents didn't have custody of them.
Mm.
My grandma did. So growing up, I saw it.
You saw it.
I didn't understand it until I was like, hold on. It was actually when I got to kids, I was like, hold on. Jonathan and Tracy lived with me for 10 years, 10, 11 years. you know, I saw my uncle, you know, before he passed away from time to time. And there, he lived there for a while. Mm-hmm. But then I was like, huh, their mom. And I was like, oh, my grandma did the same thing with Jonathan and Tracy. Mm. I get it.
Now you get it.
Yeah.
Do you think, well, it sounds like your life was basically leading up to this moment for you to be there for these kids mm-hmm. at that time. Like you growing up seeing this, and then mm-hmm. you dropping your class, like you said, 2 weeks before actually mm-hmm. taking custody of them.
Yeah.
Like, how do you feel about that?
It was tough at first. Again, I didn't really have much of a want or a care mm-hmm. to, like, really be involved in their life at that point in time.
Yeah.
I mean, I cared for them, obviously, but, like, I was 20, 19 years old, so I was interested in, you know, being young and doing my things. But the moment I realized, all right, there's a need, it was just like, I don't know, something clicked, and it was like, all right, forget life as you know it. This is what you got to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't. Can you repeat the question? I'm sorry, I got lost.
No, it's just if you kind of just think that. Maybe this was one of the purposes of your life.
For sure.
Yeah.
Looking back at everything, definitely.
Yeah.
Putting all the pieces together and just the way things worked. It's funny. In college, I ran track, and I continued running. And the season beforehand, you know, it was my first season. I had gotten pretty close to go to nationals.
Wow.
And then the second season, I was running. I was a little out of shape, but I was getting back into shape. And, you know, I was just trying to go to one or two meets so I can hit the national time to go, because I had class on Saturday mornings. And I just remember something not being right. Like, I remember I was just not feeling right, and I thought I had, like, messed up, like, my hamstring or something. Oh. And then I was like, Coach, I don't feel good. I'm going to go see the trainer or whatever. And he's like, okay. And then I just remember trying to get back, like, after stretching, like, trying to jog, and just being like, my ankles feel really weird. And I was like, I'm going to go see a doctor, because my ankles are really, really bugging me.
Yeah.
And so I go see a specialist. Is it orthopedic? I think it's orthopedic. I forget. Or a pediatrician. Not a pediatrician. No, a podologist.
Yeah.
There we go. And he checks out my foot, and he's like, this happened. I was like, it's more of my ankle. And he tells me, he's like, yeah, you have severe tendonitis in both your ankles.
What?
And I'm like, excuse me? He's like, yeah, you have severe tendonitis in both your ankles. Your season's done. And I was like, all right, whatever. I mean, like I said, it was really tough at that time for me to, like, because I had so much work to do mm-hmm. in terms of school and everything. And I was like, all right. You know, and I was like, I knew how much work I had to put into, like, to get back into shape. And not just get back into shape, because if I was going to go to nationals, I had to get even faster and all these things, and didn't have time for it because I was also working at the time. So I was, like, really not practicing as much as I wanted to or needed to.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, you can't run for, like, 2-3 months. This is May. So I go to my coach and I'm like, hey, this is what the doctor said. I'm done. And he's like, all right. You know, hopefully we see you next season, and we'll go from there. I was like, okay. And I just... And so I asked the doctor, and I'm like, so what can I do to stay active? And he's like, well, you can, you know, do swimming and this and this and that. And I was taking a course to get certified to teach people how to swim.
Okay.
So that was what I was doing. Got a job very shortly after that through the certification I was doing. And when it was time for me, it was May. It was like, no, it was like, yeah, May. It was May. So doctor's like 2-3 months, max 4 months, where you can go back to running.
Okay.
So did the math. 4 months would have been September. And September is when the boys came to live with me. 4 months after I got hurt.
Wow.
So, yeah, for sure. I definitely think it was part of... It was perfect timing. And I just remember being like... Man, it was around the time I got cleared where I said to my mom, hey, I think I'm going to drop my classes.
Mm.
So looking back, I'm like, you know, it was all part of the plan, because had I kept running, you know, and hit the time or whatever, my focus would have been on sports and all these other things. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but
yeah.
I can look back and understand that, well, that wasn't necessarily where God wanted me to go.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I was able to see that. Yep. Doors closed, so another door could open.
Yeah. Now, I'm just curious. Do you think that, let's say, 10, 15 years from now, you're going to look back and have any regrets?
No.
No?
I don't think so, because it's funny, because Elijah graduated from elementary school that first June after he came to live with us. I just remember sitting there and being like, you know, moving forward, I was like, you know, as long as I can help them grow up, I'm all right.
Yeah.
I'm all right.
It's a reward
in itself. I'll have no regrets, because I'll know that I'll have helped them grow up. And I said to myself, I was like, if they need to live with me until the day they get married,
yeah,
well, that's fine. But yeah, 10, 15 years from now, if I look back and I don't think I'll have any regrets.
Yeah.
Because, again, just that feeling is to watch Elijah, like, you know, move up in spite of everything that in his last year of elementary school, too, mm-hmm. like, just to see that all happening and see him, you know, do his commencement ceremony was just like, wow. Like, it's funny because I feel like I understand God a lot more now, because mm-hmm. they say the closest thing you can be to understanding God is being a parent.
Exactly.
So when I go through all these things, I'm like, well, a lot of things sucked and they were hard, but I have no regrets.
Yeah.
I don't think I'll ever have regrets for having, you know, I guess sacrificed my life. I don't really see that way anymore. At first, a lot of people are telling me, they're like, yeah, you know, it's cool what you're doing, but like, you can't sacrifice your life and your future. I was like, I'm not sacrificing my life and my future. I'm investing what I have into them and trying to balance everything out.
That's great. I like how you worded that. It's exactly what, you know, other people need to see, that perspective
mm-hmm.
of, you know, what you're doing. It sounds like you're trying to teach them to be resilient, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to teach them to be resilient because, yeah. you know, they're so young. They don't understand much. And how can you teach resilience, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like they give you a handbook on children or a handbook on resilience. It would be a lot easier.
Yeah, very true. And the best way I say I can teach them is, you know, by being the best example I could be.
Mm.
Them, you know, again, Gabriel might not see it, but I'm pretty sure, and he'll never say it probably till the day he's a parent. Elijah, I hope he sees, you know, everything that we do for him.
Yeah.
And just one day being, it's funny, it's kind of like in the movies where I just hope that day comes and I'll probably like burst into tears the day that happens. Where like he gives like a college graduation speech.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you know, I would like to thank this person, and I'd just be in the crowd like, this is my boy, you know. But yeah, like, that's the only way I can say is just me relying on God with everything that I have mm-hmm. and him seeing that. Because there are things since they came to live with us where it's like, man, we couldn't do it on our own. Like, we couldn't do it no matter how many jobs I would have worked, like, there's no way we could be as blessed as we are now if it wasn't for God. So that's the best way I can, I guess, teach resilience to them, is showing them that we need to depend on God for everything.
Yeah. It's amazing. Now, I kind of very curious to see how they are when they're, you know, maybe 10 years older.
As am I. As am I. I think about it almost every day. Because I'm like, I think 10 years ahead, I'm like, well, Gabriel would be graduating high school.
Wow.
And Elijah will hopefully be graduating college.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I too would like to see, you know, and because then I'm like, man, what would happen? Because a lot, it scares me, not in a bad way, but Elijah's about to finish 7th grade.
Mm-hmm.
And 7th grade is way different then the seventh grade I went to for Elijah. We're 10 years apart, me and Elijah.
Wow.
So even 10 years makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think about, like, I mean, high school was, like, obviously, like, in every high school you have those influences. But I think about Elijah going into high school now, the way culture and society is
mm-hmm.
now, and just being like, God, like, all I can do is teach him the way I know how.
Yeah.
Being a balance between instilling what's right and also, as well, I say it now as a joke, but it's not a joke, letting him make his own mistakes.
Yeah.
And it's tough because, like, I know he's not doing something that he shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
Not that he can't do, because you can do anything you want, but should you be doing it? And I literally find myself just sometimes being like, I gotta let him make his own mistakes.
Yeah.
I gotta let him. I can tell him, give him the advice and what I know to be true and what I know to be best for him right now, or what I think is best for him right now. But I gotta let him make his own mistakes. And for Gabriel, right now I'm a little, gotta, I guess, like, manage him a little more,
mm-hmm.
be on top of him a little more. Although with Elijah, sometimes I gotta, like, check him, because he, like any 12, 13-year-old, they think they can't get away with a lot.
Yeah.
And he thinks I don't pay attention,
yeah.
and he thinks, like, I wasn't 12, 13. Sometimes I feel, and I catch him in a lot of things, and I'm like, what do you have to say for yourself? And I'm like, oh, I don't want to hear it, because I know every excuse in the book. I wrote the book. I'll show you. And he'll be like, no. I'm like, Elijah, please. Like, I know. I tell him, I'm not mad at you. I just want you to be upfront with me.
Yeah.
You know? And with Gabriel, you know, it's like, all right, Gabriel, this is what we got to do. This is how it's going to be. Feel free to express yourself, but just know I'm in charge. And, you know, that's it. I mean, it's the way I've been doing it, and I think I've done a good job.
Yeah.
I think I've done a good job.
I
agree.
And
hopefully it will be seen that way further down the line.
Yeah. Imagine when they get married.
I don't know. I need to get married first before I start thinking about that. I need to get married first before I start thinking about
Well, of course,
yeah.
you know.
But it's funny, because when my family constantly asks me, like, where's your girlfriend? I was like, listen, I don't have time for a girlfriend.
Yeah.
They're like, why do you say that? I was like, because I have two kids. And they're like, ooh, you're right. And I'm like, yeah. And I was like, and I don't think it would work out, because, I mean, I know I can have a relationship if I wanted to. But at that point in time when they would be asking me all that, it would be like, I would get really angry, because I would separate time for a person.
Yeah.
Very time I really don't have, and, you know, and they don't give me, you know, I think the time that I would deserve.
Yeah.
I would just get frustrated and be like, you know what, this isn't worth it.
Yeah.
So I kind of thankful that I have not gotten into a relationship since I got the boys. Do I think I'd be able to handle one now, currently speaking? I think so, but at the same time, there's a lot going on right now too, so
yeah.
I don't know if I would want to do that to somebody who also deserves time from me as well.
Of course. And not only that, but I think it's even more difficult to find a person to have a relationship with. Not just because, you know, you have the two kids, but also you have to make sure that person is, you know, an amazing person to
yeah.
bring into their lives.
Of course.
Because so many people have been in their lives and left their lives
yeah.
and come into their lives and left as well, and you don't want to keep doing that to them either.
Like, I tell them, I'm like, the first person you guys will see me date will be the person I'm probably going to marry. And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, because I don't, especially now, I don't buy into the concept of dating just to date.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, if I ever bring somebody around, like you said, it will be because it's serious and the person has all the qualities I'm looking for in
mm-hmm.
someone, and they're worth bringing around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm drinking this smoothie. It's really good.
No, this is interesting. I honestly never knew the story behind the kids. I just knew you had them. I was like, okay, he has the kids. They're there. That's hard. Like me placing myself in your shoes, I would have been freaking out. Like, I just want to keep them in a box all day and just make sure they're fed and they're clean. And it's so hard.
I will say there have been very, I wouldn't say I've freaked out, but there are moments where it's just like, God, like, honestly, there's just days like I pray and I'm like, God, like, I need to be better for them.
Exactly.
And it's like, I just find myself sometimes just like, damn, like, I gotta depend on you, God, because that's all I got, and that's who I want them to depend on.
Yeah, of course. It's as like yourself isn't enough for them. You want to be better, not just for yourself, but now these other two lives that have yet to live. You want them to experience the best, especially after the tragedy they've already been through.
Very much so. And it's fine. I find myself right then, because it's a strange dynamic, because I'm not the only one who has custody of them. My mom does too. So it's like, people would ask me like, do you have like childcare? I'm like, well, here's the deal. I'm not married. So it's a strange dynamic, because I'm a parent who's parenting with their parent. So yeah, I don't really have much leeway when it comes there. Like, that's a weird dynamic in itself, knowing when to, how to walk that fine line of being the children's authority and the main one, but also respecting the authority that is my mother.
For you.
Yeah, for me.
Yep.
And very few times where it's happened where I think I've crossed that line, but there's also been there's been times where it's like, I literally said this to my mom, I'm like, Mom, I'm not talking to you as your son, even though I am your son.
Yeah.
I'm talking to you as the children's main parent.
Yep.
And at first, she was like, what do you mean? Like, who do you think you are?
Yeah.
And like, she understood, like, oh, he's being respectful. He's really doing this, you know, for their best interest. So yeah, that was tough. Like, it's still tough, like, walking that real fine line of, like, again, still living with my mom, still, it's her house, her rules, but at the same time, being, like, the rule maker for the boys, exactly. And that's another thing in itself where it's, I find that having been a process God has put me through, not only so that my relationship with my mom could be better, but to show the boys that, all right, he's in charge of us still, but he's still very respectful of grandma. And things like that.
You have to set that boundary, that line, not just like for your mom, but for others as well. I mean, your friends, you know, your other family members and things like that who also want to get involved. But yeah, you're the role model, the person that they're looking at or up to in how to treat you. Because you're not their biological father, right?
Yeah.
But you're there taking care of them, and you're their guide in life now. Yeah. So they kind of have to see it in order to be able to respond well to it.
It's been harder with family. Because at school.
Can imagine.
They're like, oh, you're in charge? Okay, cool. Here's the progress report. I get a lot of those where it says to parent and or guardian.
Yeah.
So I'm the and/or guardian.
I'm
the and/or guardian. So, you know, I go to the parent-teacher conferences, and I go to the concerts and all that, to the Olympic days and all that stuff.
That's so fun.
And it was really, like, when I first took Gabriel to school, they were like, who are you? And I'm like, well, I'm in charge.
And/or guardian.
And I'm and/or guardian. Hi, my name is and/or guardian. And they're like, really? And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, it took them a while to get used to it, especially when my sister was living with us, and like, she would call the school. So it was weird, because they would be like, okay, mom's calling, but like, on paper, it says that you're in charge. I'm like, oh, I am. Like, let's not get that twisted. I am.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so it's interesting and weird.
and it's hard to do.
It's hard, yeah. I want to applaud you for what you're doing. I mean,
appreciate it.
Yeah, it's not just great to see and to be your friend, but just in general, we need more people to be able to step up and you know, just have like a huge heart to do things the right way and give other people the opportunity to live a better life. You know, there's so many kids out there in foster care and in orphanages that need someone.
And I give a lot of credit to those people who do that, because they have to do that with dozens of kids.
Yeah,
so many kids who, like Elijah and Gabriel, have experienced, you know, their parents not truly valuing that bond that exists. And not valuing their kids. I can't really put it another way. It sounds harsh, but, you know, and they have to step in and do that.
Yeah.
You know, and, yeah, you hear all this bad thing about foster, and there are probably really bad cases and bad people, but they're, for every one of those who, you know, separated their life to do that for them, like, I'm so thankful for them, even though they only stay with them for a week. I am so thankful for those people who took care of Elijah and Gabriel when they were there.
They were there when you least expected them to be there, which is interesting. I just think, like, all these other kids or these parents that are adopting children from maybe different countries or just even in the same town sometimes. Yeah. How does their relationship start? You were lucky enough to have them in your family. They're your nephews, you know. It's not that, even though you do have challenges with them now. But it's...
I can't think how they do it. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
I don't know where it would start. I don't know, like... They, you know, they're at their house and it's like, hey, we're going to be your foster parents. Everything you know has changed. And it's like, I don't know how they do it. And kudos to them, hats off to those people who do it. And, you know, hopefully somewhere down the line, those kids appreciate those people who took them in.
Of course.
But yeah, I don't know where it would begin. I don't know. Just getting completely unknown. And if they're old enough to remember their parents and miss their parents and stuff like that, like, gosh, that's a whole other ball game. Yeah, it's completely different.
Or even if they don't know their parents, they want to know who they are.
Exactly. So when they get older and it's like, so who are my parents? And it's like, it sounds bad to the parents, and they understand, they just want to know who it is.
But
sometimes it can come off as like, well, why don't you like, we're your parents, you know. I'm very much of the people who say, you know, your parents aren't the people who, your biological mother and father, your parents are the people who raised you and taught you to be. Obviously, you gotta show respect to your biological parents and everything, but, you know, your parents are the people who raised you.
Yeah.
Your father is the person who raised you, not your dad.
Yeah.
Your mother is the person who raised you, not your mom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's funny, I said that to my dad one day. Because he was, you know, my sister was not in a good place, and he was calling to check up on me, and I was like, listen, I'm already taking care of her kids, I'm not taking care of yours, you know, and she's 10 years older than me, and he just stayed silent, and was like, and I was like, yeah, we have nothing else to really speak of right now, like, your grandkids to take care of, I'm not taking care of your daughter, sorry, bye. But anyways, I don't know how foster people do it. Foreign exchange and all that. I have no idea how they do it.
Yeah. It's definitely mentally challenging. And, I mean, it's difficult. But like I said, I do applaud you and I congratulate you. And I'm very proud of AB. Thank you. I mean, we just have a few more minutes of the podcast left, but I want to ask if you have any advice for your friends or any one of the young adults that are listening to this.
Don't have kids till you're ready. And that sounds like a joke, but it's true. Don't have kids till you're ready. You know, and then people will be like, but yeah, you had kids. I was like, yeah, but it shouldn't have been that way, you know? I say that, you know, with the right amount of sarcasm and the right amount of truth. Like, it shouldn't have been that way. So yeah, don't have kids till you're ready. And if you do have kids, you know, whether you're married or not or whatever maybe the situation, appreciate them and love them and take care of them and be involved in their life some way, somehow, and try and do things the right way, because I've seen so many families, you know, not really be families.
Mm-hmm.
Even in my job, I see so many kids come in with single parents.
Yeah.
And then, like, the other parent will show up, the other biological parent will show up, and, you know, they're there, they watch. I work at a swim school, so, you know, just to give people that. And they're there, they watch, and they're happy, but they leave home separately.
Yeah.
And, you know, not just because they came from work or something. They don't live together.
They don't.
And even when I've worked at schools, I've seen the paperwork where it says, hey, we're divorced. This parent isn't allowed to see the child. They're not authorized to pick this child up.
Yep.
And I've had to, again, I've had to be the person that say, hey, yeah, you're not allowed to see them.
See them.
Mm-hmm. So I can only imagine how much that must suck.
Yeah.
But yeah, so my advice would be to appreciate them. Don't have kids till you're ready. And if you do have kids, you have to embrace the challenges that are going to come along with it. And, you know, just stop thinking about you. It's realize that it's not going to be about you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be about us, or, you know, you and them.
Yeah. Imagine, like, when you have your...
I hate Bram. I hope he really didn't ruin it. I don't want to touch it. I swear, if it's ruined, I'm going to cry.
Well, I have it on my phone.
We'll keep talking.
Okay. Well, I was just going to say, I imagine, like, when you have your own kids, like,
mm-hmm.
with your own wife, and mm-hmm. how you'd be, I guess, more ready than she is, because you've already been through some type of parenting.
I think about that, too. But then I also think about, I didn't raise babies.
Yeah.
So I didn't escape the baby phase.
Well, to be honest with you, that's temporary. I think the challenge that you're faced with now, I think, is way more difficult than having them from the start, to be honest.
For sure. No, like I'm saying, I haven't done the baby aspect, so that's still going to be a new experience for me.
Yeah.
But the other part's going to be easy. Once they hit, like, 4, I'll be okay.
Hopefully,
yeah. Unless it's a girl.
Oh, yeah, because you have 2 boys.
I have 2 boys. So, you know, when I have a daughter, it's going to be completely different and strange, and it can be a lot of prayer, because like I said, I've only raised boys, and when it's a daughter, it's a completely different thing for a father, that
yeah, of
is
course.
But for the mother, it to really anyone. Doesn't matter. It's still frozen.
Yeah,
it's weird. I don't want to touch it.
Well, I'm gonna close it on my phone.
Yeah, go ahead.
It was nice talking to you.
Thank you.
I had a great time listening to your experiences and just the perspective inside of, like, the mind of a young adult / parent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't really have that nowadays.
Yeah, I don't think we would kind of want that, to be honest.
Yeah.
Mine is a special case. I don't think we would want that, and I'm sorry. I really don't want to. I'm sorry to your professor who's got to listen to this.
It's okay. No, she asks us to do 30-minute sessions, so I'm combining them into one, Professor McGonagall.
I give consent. Just so you know.
Okay, he gives consent.
But I will write it out so Monique
has
that in writing.
Thank you. All right, so I'm just gonna end it here. Hopefully, you enjoyed our interview. Thanks for teaching me everything, Professor McGonagall. I hope you have a great summer. I'll see you in the fall.